From the four corners of Southern California, this is The Hot Seat, and you're in it with me, Max Schwartz. It starts right now. Today on the phone, as previously promised, CNN Los Angeles correspondent and USC Annenberg alumnus, Casey Wyan. How are you, Mr. Wyan? Thank you very much for taking the time to call into The Hot Seat this morning.
Doing great, Max. It's nice to be with you.
Thank you. And I mentioned that Mr. Wyan is a USC Annenberg alumnus because it will be an important note for our interview. And I know some of you may be wondering why I'm talking to a CNN correspondent when this is supposed to be a political podcast, but I'm going to tell you now that The Hot Seat, we're going to broaden our view a little bit, and we're going to do more than just politics. I'm going to talk with Mr. Wyan today about the future of journalism. Next week, we're talking to someone else about the future of journalism. So with that, and because I know Mr. Wyan can be taken away with the ring of a phone, let's get started. For those that do not know who you are or what you do, would you mind explaining what you do for CNN, how long you've worked for them?
Well, I've worked for CNN since the 10th anniversary of CNN, which was June 1st, 1990. The company started June 1st, 1980. I joined the company as a business news correspondent working for a program called Moneyline in New York. I spent a couple of years doing that, then came to Los Angeles, which is where I'm from, and became the Los Angeles business news correspondent and eventually West Coast bureau chief for CNN-FN, which was a network that we had on the air for a few years that no longer exists. I covered business news for several years, worked for a program called Lou Dobbs Tonight, and when Lou Dobbs left CNN, went off the air, I transferred over to become a general news correspondent for the CNN Los Angeles Bureau about 4 years ago. What that means is we are part of CNN's Western Region, which means we cover 22 different states. Pretty much everything Chicago West in the United States is covered out of our region. We have some other bureaus in other cities, but basically means a lot of travel from everywhere, Alaska, Hawaii, to Chicago, Colorado, you name it. All throughout the Western United States is our territory.
That's a big territory. I'll say I didn't expect it to be 22 states wide. I thought it was maybe going to be 5, 10, not 22. But what is it like going from once being the bureau chief in Southern California to just a general assignment reporter? What is it like going down, more or less?
Well, I don't necessarily look at it that way. And frankly, when I was the bureau chief, I was the bureau chief of CNN Financial News, which was in Los Angeles, which was a subset of the CNN Los Angeles Bureau. I've never been the bureau chief of the actual Los Angeles Bureau. So there were just 9 people that reported to me, and the management responsibilities were actually very, very small. My main duties were still as a business news correspondent then. So it hasn't been that much of a shift from that point of view. But the one thing about being a business news correspondent is you have semi-regular hours. Mm-hmm. Business shows are on the air Monday through Friday. Traditionally, business news happens sort of during regular business hours. So you have kind of a predictable schedule for the most part. Now that I'm a general news correspondent, you know, all bets are off. You can be deployed at any time of day or night, weekends, holidays, you name it. So it is a much more sort of action-packed job. It can be very, very difficult, also very exciting.
Absolutely. And I did notice when Colorado on the first legalized marijuana, you were there one day and in a different city the next day. So it's all over. And as it's been told to me, all journalists work Thanksgiving.
Actually, it's funny. Thanksgiving is the one holiday that I've always tried to get off, but I work a lot of Christmases.
Okay. And I will say, would you consider yourself, or I will ask rather, do you consider yourself a reporter who got into business because that's where there was a job opening, or do you consider yourself a business journalist who now is doing general assignment reporting?
Interesting question. I was always interested in the stock market and economics through high school and college. My dad got me involved in investing from a very early age, so I always considered it a significant part of my reporting. I think I've always considered myself a journalist first. I used the fact that I had some business and economic experience at a time when not many people did to parlay that into a job. It was a specialty that allowed me to separate myself from the, you know, hundreds of other people who graduated from a broadcast journalism degree at USC in 1983. And it really helped, I think, get a leg up having that specialty at that time. But I consider myself a journalist first and a former business reporter second.
Okay, that's good to know. And it is interesting because in today, they encourage people, Annenberg encourages people to double major or minor in what they want to report on. So that's why, that's part of the reason why I asked. And you talked about being in the West Coast Bureau. What does that mean? How does the West Coast Bureau work with the other bureaus? And what is the scope in terms of your collaboration with them, as well as your communications and in terms of overlap of coverage?
Well, there are conference calls early in the morning every day to decide how we're going to cover different stories and in what way. We have a bureau that's out of our western region. We have a bureau that's not a centralized bureau. It's actually people working out of their own homes with a significant presence and home offices in San Francisco. We have a bureau that we just opened last year in Denver. We have a bureau in Chicago. So all of us in those different bureaus, reporters, producers, photojournalists, satellite truck operators, engineers, we deploy to different areas depending on how news warrants. If there's a story in, for instance, Colorado, you mentioned the legalization of marijuana. Well, we have one Chicago-based correspondent. Well, two others from Los Angeles, myself and another colleague, went to Denver to cover that story. When a story is big enough, when we think there's going to be enough interest, or when it's a story that's really going to be in a lot around the clock kind of story, for instance, a major disaster, we'll bring in more people from other bureaus, other offices to support that coverage.
Okay, so if I'm understanding correctly, LA is the West Coast hub, more or less, and then there are smaller West Coast bureaus throughout the West.
That's correct.
Okay, so when there is a big story, for instance, you talk about Denver. Is there not a reporter in Denver? It's just behind the camera people. Is that why you went, or was it a big enough story?
There is a reporter in Denver, but we had planned major coverage for that event the first week in January when marijuana became legal for recreational use in Colorado. That one person could not be on the air basically 18 hours a day for 9 or 10 days straight. So we bring in others to support the coverage. So we split things up. Some of us will do morning coverage. Some of us will do evening coverage. Some of us might do more feature reporting spread out throughout the middle of the day. It's just a lot. We bring in different reporting and producing teams just because you physically, can't be up 24 hours a day for several days. Not at my age.
I understand. And what is it like working between the LA Bureau, which is the second largest media market in the country, and the West Coast Hub, with the Headquarters Bureau in Atlanta?
It's interesting. It's different because our headquarters is in Atlanta, but we also have sort of a second headquarters in New York. Many of our programs are based out of New York, and then we also have programs that are based out of Washington. This organization has been collaborating on a bureau level across the country and, in fact, across the world for decades. So we're really used to it. It seems natural to me. It's pretty much in the television business, since I never worked in local news, it's the only thing I've ever known, is working for a national network that has bureaus flung around the country. It seems just sort of natural to me.
And I'm assuming there's a lot of collaboration and everything. By this point, everyone kind of works with one another. And like you, it is interesting because world headquarters are in Atlanta, but all the political coverage is out of Washington. You've got people in New York, like you said. So it's all kind of mishmashed together at some point.
Yeah, I think it actually works well. We have resources spread out around the country and around the globe, unlike any other television news organization in existence. And so we're able to respond to stories that break in remote areas, I think, a lot better a lot of the time than other news organizations are because we're so spread out.
And one more question on this topic, and then I want to get into specific stories. Would you say that it is strange working in the West Coast, which is the number two media market, but then having the headquarters in one that's not in the top two media markets and working and having to listen to them? Or would you say the dynamic just works?
I think the dynamic just works. There's plenty of news to cover for all of us in all of these regions. We've got the entertainment industry out here. We've got a lot of stories that are on the top of people's minds right now. I mean, you talk about, the drought that's going on right now, the fire danger, the whole discussion about global climate change. Well, nowhere is that more evident than in the Western United States right now. There is plenty of news to cover out here, so it's not like there's any sort of conflict, and we feel like we are being ignored because we're not in New York or Washington. There's plenty for us to do and plenty for us to cover, and I think it's respected.
Absolutely. And were you up in the Central Valley when Speaker Boehner went there to talk about the drought?
I was not there for that. No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, there's still going to be a lot of coverage, and especially now that Kevin McCarthy is involved in using the GOP National News Conference to discuss it. But like you said, you started working in 1990. What are some of the coolest stories or best stories you covered?
You know, one of the most memorable stories I covered was there was a big tornado in Joplin, Missouri, a few years back. And we got there just hours after it hit. And that was really an incredible experience for me because to see firsthand the devastation that something like that, you know, being from the West Coast and spending 4 years on the East Coast, I had never lived in tornado country before. I never lived in tornado country, never really experienced being around one and seeing the kind of devastation that it can cause. But from a journalist perspective and a television journalist perspective, there were incredible stories to tell, heartbreaking stories, very visual stories, and stories where we were actually able to help people reunite with their loved ones. So we were telling a good story and actually doing a service to some folks, which I think is journalism at its finest. So I'd say that's one of my sort of favorite stories that I'll remember for a long time. One of the main areas I covered for a long, long time was illegal immigration and border security because the show that I worked for at that time had a particular interest in that subject. And I think that's very, very, very proud of the work we did covering that issue. Seeing drug tunnels, climbing through drug tunnels, interviewing people who have been impacted negatively by the nation's immigration policies, whether they're people who are victims of crime or people who were brought here as children illegally and are now stuck through no fault of their own. That's just a rich area of coverage that I spent a lot of years looking at. We also covered the case of two Border Patrol agents who were convicted of shooting a Mexican drug smuggler. And there were a lot of questions about that case and whether they were improperly charged. And our coverage of that actually led to those two agents being pardoned by President Bush. So those are some of the highlights, I would say.
Okay. And you talk about being in Joplin. How are you able to maintain your composure at that point?
It's hard to say how. You just do it. Mm-hmm. Part of it is through experience. You're there, as long as you're there and going with the mindset, you're going to listen with people, you're going to listen to people, hear what they have to say, provide an opportunity for them to speak their mind, provide some, if at all possible, help and maybe even some catharsis for them. You feel like you're really doing a public service. You have to have your wits about you because things are still falling down around you and there's still, you know, power lines that are dangerous and structures that are falling, and you see a lot of things that aren't pleasant to see, but I don't think I've ever had much of a problem in a situation like that maintaining your composure. I will say there were some scary moments because we were in our hotel one night and the tornado sirens went off and everybody had to huddle in the hallway of the hotel as the tornado fortunately passed by and the danger passed. Those kind of moments give you a little pause, but, you know, I'm growing up in Southern California, experienced earthquakes. You know, you kind of just learn to roll with them, I think.
Okay, and you talk about helping people. Where does CNN stand on the ethics of that? Because I've heard journalists say that, you can't get involved with a story, but you helping people is the opposite extreme.
Well, I think that line is beginning to blur a little bit you can't get involved in the story. We've seen Anderson Cooper, one of our anchors of AC360, his coverage of hurricanes in Haiti, where he expressed his personal outrage at the lack of help for the victims of that hurricane. I think that's really, he's not taking sides in terms of Republican or Democrat, anything like that. He's expressing real human emotion that I think most viewers can relate to. And I don't think that is overstepping the bounds of what journalism should be. And when I talk about Joplin, some of the help we provided to people, I'm talking about what happened to our loved one. When are we going to get the body out of the coroner's office so we can bury that person? I don't think when you're helping somebody get answers to those questions that that violates any journalistic ethics. At least doesn't violate my personal journalistic ethics.
Okay, that's a good perspective from a practicing journalist. And you talk about being all over. How is it beneficial working for CNN and having all those resources to be able to do all this?
Well, as I said, we've got people spread all over the world, and so I think we can react fast to just about anything that happens. It's a real luxury to be able to be working on a story somewhere on the West Coast and to draw on elements that a colleague has gathered, whether it's an interview or information that may be on the other side of the country or even the other side of the world. It's a real luxury as a journalist to be able to draw on the resources of this organization and be able to respond to situations very quickly. I mean, I've never heard in my years here that we can't respond to a breaking news story because of budget issues. Sure, there's budget decisions that go into how we cover things, but if there's a breaking news story, we're going to go get it.
I'll have to say that's pretty amazing, and I did read a quote somewhere where I believe it was Ted Turner who said, we're going to be the only ones standing around waiting for something to happen. So,
well, you know, maybe there was some of that back in the day when Ted started. But,
yeah, that's what I mean. It was
I
from
sure
back.
I don't spend a lot of time standing around waiting for something to happen.
Well, he's. I guess that was from when they first started and you had camera people all over just waiting. But
right, right.
I will say that, and you must be in the pretty, you're in a good position compared to your other colleagues. Being at LAX, you can get to places pretty quickly.
Well, that's true. You can get to places very quickly. You know, a lot of there's a lot of hopping on planes, and we're actually closer to, our bureau is closer to Burbank, so we fly out of Burbank Airport a lot. I live in Orange County, so I fly out of John Wayne a lot. You know, it's. We are able to deploy very quickly. These days, with airport security being the way it is, anything closer than, let's say, Las Vegas, sometimes even Phoenix, we may even drive, because by the time you get all our gear through airport security, it may be faster just to drive. So we spend a lot of time driving to cover stories as well.
Oh, wow. I wasn't expecting that as an answer. Does each location have their own ENG truck or satellite truck, or so that way you don't have to bring it every time?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. And now I want to talk about the L.A. Bureau. And because Larry King retired, or Larry King filmed from the L.A. Bureau, what is it now used for?
Well, it's used for a lot. We still have a big presence in our entertainment unit. We have a big we have an expanding digital presence in our Los Angeles Bureau. We have HLN folks, our sister network, HLN. We still work in our bureau. We have folks for CNN and Espanol in our bureau. It's quite an active place. It continues to grow, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Other than for live shots, are there full shows filmed, or is it mainly just for live shots or for interviews?
We have the capacity to do full shows, and sometimes some of our anchors are out in Los Angeles doing full shows. Piers Morgan is an example. Anderson Cooper sometimes is out here. Even some of our Dayside newsroom anchors are out here from time to time doing their shows. But mostly it is a bureau that is used for live guests, also for the kind of stuff I do, electronic news gathering. But we have full capacity to do live shows out of this bureau. We have a lot of studio space, expanded studio space just recently.
Okay, and now I'd like to bring USC into the conversation. And would you say there's an advantage of having USC, which is one of the top journalism schools, in a city that has a major CNN bureau?
An advantage to USC or an advantage to CNN?
Either one.
Well, I think it's probably a beneficial arrangement. I know I have a lot of colleagues that went to USC, so that certainly helps. My producer on the story I'm on today is Paul Verkaman. I was editor of the Daily Trojan in 1982, and he was the sports editor of the Daily Trojan back in 1982. So here, more than 30 years later, we're still working together. So there are a lot of USC alums that have either now work at CNN in Los Angeles or have in the past. So I think it is a nice beneficial relationship. It also helps us. I have to give a shout out to the Bruins across town as well. But it's nice having the major universities in an area close to our bureau because they have so many experts that may be able to comment and provide insight into stories that you're working on.
Okay. And do you believe that a practical education like the ones USC students receive in the field of journalism, do you believe that those are beneficial?
Well, it was certainly beneficial to me. It helped me get my foot in the door into my first couple of jobs in journalism. I think it was very, very beneficial. But that's all it does. It gets you a foot in the door. After that, it's up to you.
Was there Annenberg TV News at the time you were here?
No, there was not. We had a television news production facility, but it wasn't something that was broadcast to the campus on a regular basis. My memory is that we had a campus radio station, and that was about it. My main journalistic outlet in college was with the Daily Trojan.
Okay, and I'd like to now move and talk about the future of journalism and what it holds. What do you believe is the future of journalism, both in terms of the practice of doing it and the technology needed to do it?
Well, I think it's becoming available to a lot more people to practice journalism. CNN uses iReports, from viewers. I think if you look at what's going on online and social media, in a lot of ways, that is journalism, citizen journalism, with technology enabling almost anyone to practice journalism. I remember when I first started as a reporter, I was working for the Financial News Network in New York. We would carry around these giant decks, 3/4-inch tape, with an audio man. We'd also have a cameraman carrying his camera. The cumbersome nature of the equipment that you had to carry around to practice television journalism was, really an impediment to getting things done. Now, people practice journalism with their iPhones. So I think that we're going to see more and more of that. At the same time, I think there's going to be a need for news organizations like CNN and others where people can differentiate and have some confidence that the information that they're getting, that the pictures that they're seeing are in fact real and have in fact been vetted by professional journalists. I think, there's a danger for a lot of, as much as we use Twitter these days to find out things that are going on, you can't just put a tweet on the air without making sure or finding out for yourself whether the information is accurate. But it's an incredible tool that we're using more and more.
Absolutely. So would you say that there's still value to a journalism education?
Absolutely. I think it's vital that there are journalism schools providing that education and context and experience. I will say this. I don't think having a journalism degree is necessarily a requirement for being a good journalist. There are a lot of people who come to our field from other disciplines in college and just learn the good old-fashioned way, starting on an assignment desk somewhere, getting out in the field and learning how to practice sort of trial by fire, and that worked just as well.
Yeah, I guess it's the practical nature of it. If you can do that in college, great, but ultimately I've realized that if you can do anything out in the real world, that's going to teach you more than anything you can do in a classroom.
Absolutely.
What do you think is the future of the evening news at 6:30? Do you think that eventually those will go away?
I have no idea. Honestly, for me as a viewer who's 52 years old, I don't find a lot of value in it. But I think that's maybe a time thing. If I wasn't in the journalism business and wasn't exposed to many of the same stories that the evening newscasts are covering every night, I might, you know, want to sit down and have a half-hour professional look at what happened today and what I need to know. So, I you know, I'm not a television programmer. I just don't have a good sense of what the future is for that.
Okay, and you talked about you were the editor at the Daily Trojan. Do you think we're going to see the demise of newspapers anytime soon?
If you had asked me 4 or 5 years ago, I would have said no way. But I think newspapers, in terms of a physical newspaper that you need to hold in your hands, I mean, that was something that throughout most of my life I loved doing. Getting up in the morning, a cup of coffee, and opening a newspaper. There's just a physical act. When I stopped my physical newspaper subscriptions and went completely online, I thought it'd be a tough transition, but it really hasn't. And it seems natural now. So I think we could see a time where physical newspapers may disappear, but I don't think that the news organizations that are printing those newspapers are going to go anywhere. I think that they're going to live online and need to live online.
I agree with you. And just for curiosity's sake, when did you switch your newspaper subscription to totally digital?
I don't remember exactly when, but I'm thinking about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay, so just when this digital revolution was starting to be used by the print media companies.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
Okay, and I got one more question for you because our half hour is almost up. I don't know if you've been following what's happening at the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism, but we are getting our wonderful Wallace Annenberg Halls, which will open in August 2014, and will be a converged newsroom with our radio, TV, and digital media outlets, along with the documentary newsroom, all in one place, and it will be either the largest or second largest newsroom in the city of Los Angeles, according to the dean. Do you think that is the future of news, converged newsrooms? And do you think that's
absolutely
the best path?
Absolutely. I think that is a wonderful idea. I would have loved as a USC student to have a facility like that where you, because when I was at USC, I didn't know if I wanted to be a print journalist. I didn't know if I wanted to be a magazine writer. I didn't know if I wanted to be a television producer. I did not want to be in front of a camera on television. That just happened sort of by chance almost. But it would have been a wonderful thing to be able to have one facility where you could practice all of those things and figure out what the best fit for you was. So I think it's a great idea and will go a long way toward providing USC students with a great education, great experience before they begin their careers in the so-called real world.
Is CNN going to implement something like that in the future?
Well, we kind of are already doing it. I mean, our newsroom right now, we've got people who are doing stories for CNN.com. We've got people who are doing stories for CNN television. And we've got people who are working on, you know, documentaries. So it's happening in our newsroom, and I suspect others around the country as well.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And maybe you'll come down and see the opening of Wallace Annenberg Hall in August.
I'd like to see that. It was nice speaking with you.
Thank you for joining me, Mr. Wyan. It was a pleasure. The Hot Seat After Hour starts right now. You can email the Hot Seat inbox at thehotseatwithmaxschwartz@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at MaxSchwartzTV. You can also read and follow my blog at MaxSchwartzTV.blogspot.com. You can now subscribe to the Hot Seat's newsletter by clicking the link on our page. Go to AnnenbergRadio.org/podcast and click on the link underneath the Hot Seat's description and enter your email address. Thank you for listening. I hope you will join me next time with congressional candidate Marianne Williamson.